Welcome back to Purely IFS, a show that aims to support therapists and practitioners in using internal family systems as their primary approach with clients. I'm Gail Williamson.
And I'm Emma Redfern. In today's episode, it's part two of our focus on the updating process and facilitating the hookup between self and part.
And we thought it would be useful to look at a case example of updating in some detail.
Yes, it's a fairly advanced example with a complex system, but we're going to take our time as we go through it and explain step by step.
So this client, I'll call her Hazel, has experienced a lot of healing, and now we're working with what we both agree are really core exiles. She found them together in a shack, three motionless babies in cots who had given up on looking for care, along with an 8-year-old covered in bruises and mute, and a 10-year-old protector who said she was carrying the burdens of the other four. Hazel had experienced a neglectful, cruel mother and a father who failed to protect her, but parts still idealized him.
Ah, yes, that can be quite common. A child holding on to the fantasy of one perfect parent to help them survive.
Yeah. So after one session where we just talked, and Hazel had spoken a lot about her father's betrayal, she experienced a strong physical response in the form of extreme sweating, which when we investigated in the next session was caused by an alarm bell part, who said its job was to signal with huge fear when she needs to go into protective mode. We asked this part then who it was that we really needed to help, and it indicated the 8-year-old. This exile, who became known as Coco.
Yes, this client names her parts, doesn't she? Not everyone does, but it's a great way to personify and differentiate parts from each other, and it can be useful keeping us on track. Also, Gail, just to say, this is a great example you're giving of how IFS professionals can really get to know a client's system and open up to parts being a resource for them and the therapy. So you ask the part who inside needs help urgently, and the part knew and could tell you.
That's right. I didn't have to be the one making that decision. My figuring out part didn't have to figure it out. As we always say, anything you don't know, just ask.
As in, don't take everything on yourself. Don't feel you should know everything in advance of going inside. I think of IFS as an emergent form of therapy. As therapists, we hold a map or multiple more detailed maps for how to navigate the work, like the six Fs, the protector questions, and so on. But the inner actual terrain or landscape transforms and unfolds as we walk it with the client.
So when we began talking to Coco, it became clear that the session where Hazel and I had spoken a lot about how her father had let her down had triggered huge fear in Coco. She was afraid that she was going to be cut off from her dad, that he was like a lifeline for her. And if she lost him, she'd lose the one person in her corner and be truly alone. She wouldn't survive. And so, as I'm listening to this, I'm holding the awareness that the girl is still focusing on her dad for survival, and that my job is to help her focus instead on self. Over the next week, the 8-year-old continued to communicate her existential fear. And when we went back to her, with my intention being to really help her turn to self, there was a difficulty with the fourth F.
Am I right, Gail, that in the next session, you'd have suggested returning to help the exile?
Yes. I mean, Hazel's very self-directed and good at maintaining relationships with her parts in between sessions. But nevertheless, I am still often the one encouraging returning to a part in our next session.
And for those of us who are now trained in IFS, doing this means maybe being more directive than perhaps we were taught to be in our first traditional foundation or undergraduate therapy training.
Yeah, and that can take a while to get used to when you're transitioning, where you almost feel like you're doing something wrong.
Sure. but actually it's often necessary. Otherwise, we'll find we spend more time talking about parts, maybe, rather than two parts. Because, of course, many of our clients, and I'm also including me here, sometimes we'll have parts who prefer not to go inside, or maybe who prefer to avoid the work.
Yeah. So Hazel and I returned to Coco, and because Hazel sees her parts really clearly inside, I didn't need to use the first F of the protocol. Coco was there immediately when Hazel focused inside, but we did spend a bit of time with focusing and fleshing out, and then I asked Hazel how she felt towards Coco. It was clear from Hazel's facial expression that she was struggling somehow, and when I named this, what I was seeing, she said, "Well, Coco knows that I get it, that I feel her pain, but it wasn't feeling quite right for me."
Ah, that phraseology is often a red flag for me too, Gail. I've just started reading Martha Sweezy's latest book about shame and guilt, where she writes about empathy. She highlights that for protective parts, identification and empathy go together. For me, when I hear a client say of a part, "She knows I get it," or "I know it already, I'm her," then I get curious about whether a caretaking part might be active and blended with the client. Unlike parts, self can empathize and remain differentiated at the same time and without agenda. Whereas parts may identify with the part in pain in order to empathize with it. Which isn't wrong, it's just that unconditional love and unlimited compassion are what self has to offer, which is different. Also, let's not forget that witnessing is a very valuable stage or phase of the steps of healing. And already knowing what the part is going to share can be to curtail or avoid details of what happened, perhaps unnecessarily and unhelpfully.
I wonder if it would be useful, Emma, to say a bit more about the difference between empathy and compassion, because it is an important distinction, isn't it? Like it's been found that empathy lights up pain circuits in our brain, whereas compassion increases activity in areas of the brain associated with reward. So how do you define compassion?
Well, primarily it's a way of being present for and with rather than doing, which Dr. Lexi Rothman points out really neatly in the foreword to the transitioning book. The way it feels to me inside, and other people may experience it differently, is as openness to and acceptance of the other, without leaning into and towards them. I feel a sense of depth, breadth, and largeness. I feel resourced and grounded and without needing anything from the other person towards whom I feel compassionate. I don't need them to change, to stop being upset or angry or whatever the form of suffering is that they're experiencing. I have the capacity to be with them where they're at. And I have to say, some parts can experience compassion almost as cold or harsh, because unlike empathizing, it has this self-contained feel to it. It lacks that social exchange or transaction that is often present in the form of identified empathizing I mentioned earlier.
Great, thanks, Emma. I think for me, it always comes down to the point you made about not leaning into the other, where if a part of me is taking over, I will notice that I'm literally no longer holding my seat. There's that real physical sense of leaning into the client. So to go back to Hazel, when I was trying to assess for self by asking the fourth F, I could see that she was really struggling. So I named what I was noticing. I said to Hazel that she seemed to be struggling, and I asked, did she feel she had some separation from the exile? Now, unusually for Hazel, she struggled to answer and was kind of defensively saying, "Well, I've been on the same path as her, so she knows I get it." And then me responding, "Yeah, but you know, Hazel, we don't want you to be overwhelmed by her pain." But that comment just seemed to result in a little bit more irritation in Hazel. I could see it in her expression.
And I guess you'd be aware then that there has to be a part there, because self wouldn't be irritated.
Yeah. So then I tried a different tack. I said, "Can you ask Coco who she sees right now when she looks at you, Hazel?"
Another great way of detecting self's presence and a key differentiating question. Similar to another of my IFS trainers, Mike Elkin's technique, where we ask a part to look the client in the eye and tell us who or what it sees there.
Ah, I love that intervention. It's proven so useful at times where, for example, you're guiding a client to say, ask the part, can he look you in the eye and tell you, is he seeing someone he can trust?
Offering your own eyes for a protector to see another part or even themselves can be powerful too. Mike Elkin teaches an unblending technique whereby you might suggest to a client, now the part is beginning to trust the you who isn't a part, ask the part if it would like to see itself through your eyes. That way it can see how it looks to the you who isn't a part.
However, when I guided Hazel to invite Coco to look at her, I got a sigh in response, but I persisted, my five P's. How did that go, Hazel? Does Coco see someone she can trust is strong enough to look after her? Hazel replied a bit reluctantly, well, she sees someone in pain.
So now, as the therapist, you have clarity about the struggle you've been seeing in Hazel.
I know for sure that there's another part there. There's a part in pain. So I said, tell Coco that she's seeing another part. She's not seeing you right now. Hazel, with another irritated sigh, said, no, girl, really, I think that's just me. I mean, is it not normal to be affected by this? And I replied, yeah, absolutely. But I think there's another part here being overwhelmed by Coco's pain. So just see, Hazel, if you can ask the other part that Coco is seeing, the one that's struggling with this, to step back and let you handle this. There was silence, so I checked. Were you able to do that, Hazel?
Because you're always going to want to check the response to interventions like this, which often involves calling on patience and persistence, or whichever of those five P's comes naturally in the moment.
And then finally, I heard the part that was trying to do the job of self. When Hazel said, but I'll never be as strong or as good as him.
Yes, and again, when you heard, I'll never be as strong or as good as him, you're detecting a part, because that's not something self would say. Self wouldn't compare or feel inadequate.
Yeah. So the part who said that turned out to be just 2.5. Her name is now Storeen, quite unusual. And she said her job was to hide Hazel because it just wasn't safe for her to be seen.
I'd like to jump in there, girl, with a couple of things. First, at a point like this, it might be an opportunity for some explicit updating around some of the changes that have happened since that age of 2.5. For example, those unsafe people are probably no longer in the client and part's life in the same way in the outside world and may even be dead. Also, because the client has grown up, or time has passed if the client is still relatively young, the part now has other ways to keep itself safe than hiding self.
You do often get clients asking, if self is so amazing, why would my parts have to hide it?
Yes. IFS uses the analogy of parts being like clouds and self being the sun, which though obscured sometimes by the clouds is nonetheless still always present in the sky. But if as an infant we experience painful and scary consequences from others when we accessed and expressed self energy, then our manager parts may respond understandably with never again and take on the job of keeping self hidden or even pushed out of the body. Which is why it can be a relief later in therapy when these managers realize it might be safe enough to allow access to self on the inside and perhaps at times in the outside world too.
So to go back to Hazel and Storeen, the 2.5-year-old protector who was struggling to be as strong as her dad, we began updating. We told the part that Hazel was now 45, and Hazel showed her what was different about her life now, and also that her dad was no longer alive. The protector became quite distressed at this because she hadn't known.
Ah, yes, Gail, that's a valuable reminder. There are no guarantees with any intervention, and even updating might bring a surprising response from a part. And as long as we have access to self and hold the belief the client also has self ready in the wings to meet and be met when the system allows, we can calm our fearful parts and have clarity.
Yes, and I just knew that what would make the difference here was helping her connect to self. And gradually she was willing to accept a little compassion from Hazel. But that wasn't the end of the updating process. It's been quite a commitment for Hazel, as she's had to prove herself to Storine, earn her trust, which she does by spending time in between sessions, visiting the exiles in the shack, and keeping in contact with Storine. Each subsequent session, there has been a sense of Storine turning more and more to self. But a key point came when it became clear that Storine still held an idealized view of her dad, that though she could say she trusted Hazel now, she still felt that Hazel would never be as good and strong as her dad. So it was quite tough. But what I did next was guide self to show Storine the times when he had let her down, really quite badly.
Sure, and it's not that this has to be an either-or situation. Self of the client good, dad bad. As we know, everyone has self, and it's likely that little Hazel or Storine, as this part likes to be called, may have experienced dad's self-energy at times, and also experienced being very let down by him too.
Yeah.
We can easily fall into the binary understanding of self-good, parts bad, which is not only unhelpful, but also a little misleading. IFS is isomorphic, as in it has the same or parallel systems within systems. Parts also have self, and can bring their self-energy to the table. I know Dick Schwartz talks and writes about in No Bad Parts that parts are sacred beings who have a piece of self inside that longs to reconnect with itself. In time, little Storine might want to unburden the bad times involving her dad and keep hold of the love she feels and felt for her dad.
I'm glad you made that point, Emma, that it's not either or. And also that we may at times help protectors to unburden, not just exiles. But after Hazel showed Storine certain painful situations involving her dad, the little girl was again very upset. But who will take care of me now, she asked, which is of course an opportunity to increase her awareness of self. And I handed over to Hazel. What do you say to her, Hazel? I'm telling her that I will look after her now. I will keep her safe. And as part of earning Storine's trust in this, she suggested moving the little girl to a secret hiding place that they'd had in childhood that only she and Storine knew about, which, as Hazel put it, scored her lots of brownie points. So in the most recent session we had, when we checked in, Storine was happy for Hazel to return to Coco and continue witnessing what had happened to her. And I think what will prove important in Storine's growing trust in Hazel is that we were able to do an important redo as part of the witnessing, where Hazel provided significant help to Coco, standing up for her, protecting her, and then taking her out of her traumatic situation she was in. So I'm really hopeful that, like other strong protectors we've met in Hazel's system, Storine too will soon be happy to hand over to Hazel more fully. And of course, that we will be able to unburden and retrieve all the exiles.
And I wonder, Gail, can you give listeners an idea of the timeline here? How long has it taken to get to this place in your work with Hazel, Coco and Storine?
Well, we first encountered Coco and the exiles in the shed back in August last year. And it's now the end of January 2024, so about 6 months of pretty consistent work. Most weeks we'd go inside, but often, you know, not for the whole session, just for the last 20 minutes or so. Interestingly, we found the shack exiles after deciding to investigate Hazel's extreme anemia. We found the protector that was causing this, and this was the part that initially led to the shack. Hazel had to work similarly with this protector before he would entrust the exiles in the shack to her. And we've worked with probably three or four other protectors around this too, including the 10-year-old protector who's actually inside the shack before getting to this point in the work.
Wow, Gail, I'm thinking here of the patience and the perspective and persistence needed by both of you, you and the client. And it also shows the value of being curious about body symptoms and asking about parts involvement, since all of this was opened up when you inquired about Hazel's iron deficiency. Thank you both for sharing this with us. So next time, we're going to talk about IFS supervision and how it might differ from other forms of supervision you may have had or are having. Bye for now.
Bye, everyone.